Hello, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capitol Week, where we explore and analyze who and what have been making news at Iowa's state capitol, including the governor, lawmakers, and legislation that's in the works or could be in the works, and what it means for all of us. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'm joined as always by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we are again on Capitol Week, this time live on Memorial Day night to be replayed on Wednesday. It is good to be with you.
Nice to be with you, Dennis, as always.
There is so much going on, not necessarily under the Iowa Capitol Dome, but elsewhere. Let's start with the U.S. Capitol last week, when Iowa Republican U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst were among 35 Republicans who voted to block debate on that bill to form a bipartisan commission to investigate the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol. Let's talk about that.
Yes, well, this was something that the Democrats were really upset about. They were hoping to get a bipartisan commission. The structure of the commission they're creating is very similar to the 9/11 commission that was created. It would be would involve people outside Congress, an equal number of Republican and Democratic appointees. And this bill had a deadline that they had to complete their work by December 31st of this year, which I don't honestly know how realistic that is given the scope of an investigation like that. But the idea was that then the probe wouldn't bleed into the election year. And they got six Republicans to vote for it, a seventh who wasn't there, but said that he would have voted for it if he had been there. But it wasn't enough to get to the 60 votes they need to overcome a filibuster. So people were saying it's that ironic thing about the U.S. Senate that 54 in favor and only 35 against, and yet the 35 are victorious in the vote over the 54 because of the arcane Senate rules.
What did Senator Grassley say about the reason he opposed it?
Well, he had he released a statement saying that there are already investigations underway, that law enforcement, federal law enforcement, is already looking at the attack on the Capitol, and that he would like to see a broader examination of political violence. He thinks that, in particular, this was one line from his statement: what message does Congress send to the American people when we have a commission for riots in Washington but ignore the ones across the rest of the country? And this was discussed when the House and Republican and Democratic members of the Homeland Security Committee were going over the draft of this bill. They agreed pretty early on to keep it focused on the January 6th attacks, because that's already a fairly large area. And it's really different from sporadic rioting that might have occurred in some U.S. cities last year, but that wasn't egged on by the president, that wasn't designed to disrupt the transfer of power or overturn or, you know, disrupt the counting of the electoral college votes. So, you know, it's really quite different from things. An attack on the seat of government is very different from what was happening, some of the public disorder that happened in isolated cases around the country. So even a lot of Republicans didn't really accept that. And I should mention again, I think we talked about this in a previous week, but 35 Republicans in the House did vote for this bill along with all the Democrats. And one of them was Marionette Miller Meeks. She represents the 2nd District, which is most of Southeast Iowa. So it really did. I mean, that 35 is a fairly good number. It's not just a token handful of Republicans. So I think you can really say this was a bipartisan bill.
Yeah. Let's talk about Governor Reynolds. She also made national news on the coronavirus front last week, telling a town hall on Fox News, in her words, I'm quoting, "The emergency is over." She said again, in her words, "We were able in Iowa to balance the lives and livelihoods of Iowans and to do it in a responsible manner." Now, we know that during the pandemic, she focused on keeping the state completely open for business. In the early days of the pandemic, she was one of only a few governors who did not issue statewide stay-at-home orders. She refused calls for a mask mandate until very late in the game. We know all this. But here's an interesting piece. When the Des Moines Register wrote about her appearance on Fox News, this was a line they had: "She has cemented her place as one of the nation's leading voices calling for a return to normal." In other words, Kim Reynolds has become one of, and I use this in a respectful way, one of the darlings of Fox News.
Yes. I mean, she's been on Fox News primetime several times in the last few weeks. And I mean, it must be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, just that level of exposure, given how many people are watching the Fox News programs. But I found it interesting. The governor lifted almost all of the restrictions, all of the capacity restrictions, social distancing requirements, the very limited masking requirements that she imposed in November. She lifted all of that in early February. So we really haven't had much in the way of COVID restrictions, but she has periodically extended her public health disaster emergency proclamations. And she did that again last Thursday. And I was looking through it. It sounds like she's getting ready to wind those down. There were several clauses that said something along the lines of that people should not expect that this will be extended beyond June 26th. So I wonder if we're nearing the end, but it's interesting that a lot of regulatory relief or lifting regulatory requirements related to the pandemic, dozens of those remain in effect, even though she's ready to go back, be all back to normal in terms of businesses being fully open and people not having to wear masks. So for instance, the requirement that state agencies use competitive bidding procedures for contracts over a certain amount, that's still suspended for things related to the public health emergency. So I feel like if we're back to normal, maybe they should be back to normal and not doing no bid contracts, you know. So I find that a little bit paradoxical. But yes, Fox News loves the Republican governors who are sort of thumbing their nose at the Biden administration. And of course, in April, it was at a Fox News town hall where the governor announced that she was sending back $95 million in money that was from the CDC that had been earmarked for testing in schools. That was the first anybody ever heard about it.
Yeah, the governor also claimed on Fox News that the state went above and beyond to keep the meat processing plants open. We know that is true. She did not mention that thousands of packing plant workers got the coronavirus.
Yes, and there were deaths. I mean, in April of last year, the Blackhawk County Public Health were saying 90% of the infections they were finding could be traced in some way to the Tyson plant. So either somebody working there, a household member of somebody there, or somebody like, for instance, if one person works at the plant and then somebody else living in the household works in a nursing home. I mean, those plants seeded tremendously high infections in the community. And Buena Vista County, which is where Storm Lake is, they have several large meatpacking plants up there. I just checked again over the weekend for something that I was writing. Buena Vista County still has the 12th highest total per capita case rate for COVID-19 in the entire country, of all counties in the entire country. That's how widespread the infections were in Buena Vista County in that Storm Lake area. And they mostly came from these meatpacking plant explosions. So, I mean, to say that they went above and beyond to keep the people safe in the plants, I think is a real distortion of what happened. There were multiple people who died. There were household members of meatpacking plant workers who died. I remember last spring, a very sad profile of someone who the wife was working in an egg factory and she got it and spread it to her whole family, and her husband died and one of her daughters ended up on a ventilator but recovered. So, you know, these food processing plants really seeded a lot of the infections early on. And I have been requesting, and I know many other people have been requesting, records related to the governor's office communications with the meatpacking plants. These are records requests filed last April in 2020 that I still haven't received the records, and neither has anybody else. So I think we have a lot to learn still about the state response to COVID-19 in those meatpacking plants.
Let's keep going, talking about the coronavirus. You reported this weekend on Bleeding Heartland that vaccination rates in the state are still showing some racial and geographical disparities, correlating, as they do in most other states, with political and demographic features. Let's dig down a little bit deeper on that one.
Well, I've been tracking this about once a month. I've been trying to check in on the racial and ethnic disparities. Sarah Ann Ouellette, who lives in Ames, is a fantastic researcher and data analyst. And she has been crunching these numbers and updating them every day on her Iowa COVID-19 tracker website. And so she's looking at doses per capita for different racial and ethnic groups. And it started out, there was just an enormous disparity. And in part, you could say that that's because they were prioritizing nursing home residents, and that's an overwhelmingly white population in Iowa. But even after, in March, when they expanded to people with underlying conditions and people in beyond just health workers, people in certain occupations that have a lot of exposure, you still could see really big disparities, like 3-1 For the vaccination rate for white Iowans compared to black Iowans. And at one point it was 4-1 of non-Latino Iowans compared to Latinos. So I've been tracking that. And I noticed that since early April, the gaps have narrowed somewhat. And particularly with Asian Americans, there's been a lot of targeted outreach in communities to try to get people whose English is not their first language or try to reach people at community gathering places. And now the per capita vaccine dose rate for Asian Americans in Iowa is getting pretty close to the rate for white people. But for Black Iowans and Latino Iowans, it's still really about, they're being vaccinated at about half the rate. There has been outreach, but it's clearly not as successful. It's narrowed the gap somewhat since April and even more since March, but we are still seeing a lot of disparities. Now, going to the political side, there's a guy who's based in Michigan, Charles Gaba, and he has a website called ACA Signups. There's just a tremendous resource for information about the Affordable Care Act and enrollment in health insurance. That's when he started the website to focus on. But in during this pandemic, he's also been compiling a lot of statistics, and he's been doing charts for all 50 states, vaccination levels by county, and he's been charting it against the political lean of the county based on the 2020 election results. And there's a correlation that's really noticeable for not just Iowa, but many other states. And of course, correlation is not causation, right? So we don't know that the people are getting vaccinated or not because of how they're voting, but it's very consistent across the country that blue counties, people are being vaccinated at higher rates than in red counties. And the redder the counties, the ones where Donald Trump got more than 70% of the vote, those have some of the lowest vaccination rates in the state of Iowa. And right now, the top county, which is Johnson, where Iowa City is, they have about 54% of residents fully vaccinated. And that's more than double the lowest county, the bottom of the heap, which is Davis County in southeast Iowa. It's sitting at about 26%. So Story County is doing well. It's in the top five or six in terms of percentages fully vaccinated, and Boone County, also in your listening area, doing pretty well. Boone County, of course, voted for Donald Trump, but some of the red counties still have relatively high vaccination rates, but a lot of them are lagging quite a bit.
New York Times has documented this as well a couple of weeks ago with a massive two-page spread of a map showing that the reddest counties in the country, the ones that voted most directly for Donald Trump in greater numbers, are the least vaccinated in general terms. They are rural, they are Republican, and those definitely correlate those two things.
Yes, and metro areas, people are getting vaccinated more than non-metro areas. And partly that could be that public health departments aren't very strong in rural areas. I mean, it's harder to get out to where people are. Maybe people would have to drive to get to the county seat or to get to whatever their pharmacy. There aren't as many small town pharmacies as there used to be. I know that those pharmacies are still playing a major role in the Iowa vaccinations, but there just aren't as many pharmacies as there used to be. So that's one issue. But I've been working on something, haven't published it yet. I've been reaching out to the public health workers in the counties that are doing really well, like Dubuque is the second highest after Johnson, and some of the red counties that are doing unusually well, like Grundy County and Boone County, to try to find out what kind of outreach are they doing and how are they able to be so much more successful than some of the other counties that voted for Donald Trump.
Right. Okay. There was also a report last week, as we zoom along here on this Memorial Day evening, that some Iowa school districts are asking, in the wake of the pandemic and the new state law prohibiting school districts from requiring masks, whether summer break should start early. Now, the Marion School District has decided to end the academic year 1 week ahead of schedule. It's going to end this coming Friday instead of the 11th. What have you heard about this around the state?
I haven't heard much because most school districts were probably going to be ending this week anyway. So I think that it's a small number that would be ending early, but I've been hearing a lot of concern from teachers. You know, many of them had an understanding that masks would be required in the classroom, and some of them have underlying conditions. You know, some people, even if they're vaccinated, they may not be fully protected. So let's say that they may have an immune disorder. They may be undergoing chemotherapy. There may be other reasons. I actually have a childhood acquaintance who's had kidney transplants, and he's fully vaccinated, but they did a test, an antibody test, and he has no antibodies. Presumably, his doctors think because of the anti-rejection medications that he takes because of the kidney transplant. So there are a lot of people who are very concerned about being in crowded classrooms with masks not required and how they're going to approach that next year.
Right. All to be announced, all to be determined down the road here. 15 minutes after the hour, this is Iowa Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We are here in this time slot every week, and we talk about what's going on in the legislature and outside the legislature, in politics generally. One of the big stories last week, at least in Ames, is that school district superintendent Jenny Reisner resigned, effective this coming June 30th. So let's talk about what's happened in the last year with the school district. It's obviously been pummeled by coronavirus-related issues in terms of in-school learning, remote learning. But one of the big things that happened was that the State House Government Oversight Committee had called Reisner to testify in March about Ames' Black Lives Matter at School Week. Let's talk about how unusual it was for that to happen and what in the world happened there.
Well, there's a conservative website called the Iowa Standard, and they did multiple posts about what was going on. I guess some of the parents complained to the writer, and these were widely shared on social media, complaining about the Black Lives Matter curriculum. And it, within the Iowa House and Senate Republican caucus, a lot of people read this Iowa Standard website. And so that I believe that that is why the House Oversight Committee held a hearing on this. These oversight committees in the Iowa House and Senate have not been very active in recent years. So they haven't held oversight. There have been no oversight committee hearings over how COVID-19 relief funds have been used, nothing about problems that with people getting in-home Medicaid services following privatization, nothing, no hearings about what's going on with Iowans having trouble collecting their unemployment benefits last year. I mean, there are all kinds of things that they could be investigating, but the Senate Oversight Committee didn't meet at all this session, and the House Oversight Committee, they had a few meetings early in the year to deal with a grievance that a University of Iowa dental student had, a conservative who claimed that he was discriminated against, and then they had this hearing in early March with calling on the carpet the people from the Ames School District, and it was really sad to watch. I will be truthful, I did not make it all the way through the committee meeting. It was more than an hour and a half long, and I found it difficult to listen to these white men berating the school district people.
Now, I'm going to go a little bit behind the scenes here, as you have often done on Leading Heartland. I have interviewed Jenny Reisner several times during her time as superintendent. I've interviewed her on KHOI Radio, the last time a couple of months ago, after the House Oversight Committee hearing. And it was a Zoom interview, so I could see her and she could see me, as we see each other on these nights. She looked to me, first of all, more tired and more weary than I have ever seen her. Her voice sounded weary, and she exhibited, if not anger, complete disappointment in the legislature for what had happened. She knew she'd been called up there to be spanked verbally by this. She was disgruntled, and she never shows disgruntlement on the air. I had questions about whether she was going to return as superintendent. I asked her that on the air. She said, yes, I'm going to be back this coming year. Obviously, we see she's not.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know the backstory there, but I do know, it, as I said, it was difficult to listen to because white experiences are very centered in Iowa and in Iowa schools. And it's not, I mean, I growing up attending Iowa public schools, we certainly, I don't recall a Black History Month, specific Black History Month curriculum. I know that we learned about Martin Luther King Jr. and a few other things, but I feel that we really didn't have a good grounding in that. And so it's unfortunate when, for some people, just even a few days or a few hours in a class of centering experiences of people who are not white, that's just too much. And these legislators, scolding is really what they were doing. And it, as I said, it was tough. I mean, the school district officials were trying to say, look, you know, we could have communicated better with the families. We could have given people more time to review. And that, you know, they were trying to make some conciliatory statements, but there was just no grace on the other side extended to them saying, you know, we understand what you were trying to accomplish with this curriculum. It was just, you know, outraged about supposedly indoctrinating students or whatever the grievance was. So it was unfortunate. And I think that if it were one of 20 hearings that the Oversight Committee meeting had, that would, it would still not be good, but you know, maybe they're looking at a wide range of things, but they're not looking at anything related to state government and state management of money. There are issues affecting thousands and thousands of Iowans that the Oversight Committee, they haven't looked at this no-bid workday contract, which has caused all kinds of problems. I mean, so I just feel that it's, in a sense, it almost looks like an abuse of power for a legislative committee to be punching down on a school district like that.
There are people in Ames who are on websites, and they have been taking victory laps in terms of some postings, claiming that they have helped force Jenny Reisner out of her job because of this Black Lives Matter at School Week. And if that is the case, if they did have that impact, and if the school board did cave to that, one can only say, boy, that's amazingly sad to have that as an outcome. A 1 week of the school year in a 3 year look at what the superintendent has gone through and had to go through in order to keep the school district alive during the coronavirus pandemic.
Right. And I mean, imagine being the next superintendent walking into that job and knowing that you're going to have to walk on eggshells. And it really is, it could have a chilling effect in other school districts as well, because nobody wants to be the focus of a target campaign. They don't want to end up on a right-wing blog with a lot of people complaining. So I would not be surprised to see other school districts scaling back their Black History Month or Black Lives Matter in classroom materials.
We will sure be following this on KHOI and on this broadcast, we promise. Let's skip around a little bit here. Last week, another candidate jumped in potentially unofficially to the race for Chuck Grassley's seat. We had talked last Monday about Dave Mulbauer of Crawford County, former supervisor jumping in. Now there's word that former Democratic Congresswoman Abby Finkenauer is preparing for this. What are you hearing?
Well, not much. She didn't get back to me with comment. There were a couple of stories in the news last Thursday about that they were. It was reported that she's been putting together a campaign staff and working on assembling a campaign, and she didn't deny those reports. She didn't post anything on her social media saying, you know, this is outrageous and not happening. So she had a little funny comment like, "Welcome to all my new Twitter followers." But so she really hasn't said anything. So I think that that's almost as good as a confirmation that it's something that she's at least seriously looking at. And Emily's List, which is a political action committee that focuses on electing pro-choice Democratic women, they had already said that the Iowa Senate race was one of those they were hoping to target next year. But of course, Emily's List would only get involved in a race like this if the nominee, the Democratic nominee, were a woman. So right now, Cindy Axne, who is the representative from the 3rd District, that includes Polk County, most of Southwest Iowa, she has not ruled out running for Senate. But I think that she and Abby Finkenauer are pretty close. They were elected together in 2018. They worked closely together. And so I really find it hard to imagine that Cindy Axne would run against Abby Finkenauer in a primary. So I'm guessing that if Abby Finkenauer is gearing up to run for Senate, then that probably means Cindy Axne is either going to run for re-election or run for governor. She worked in state government for a number of years before running for Congress. And she's definitely considering running for governor. She's acknowledged that she's considering running for governor.
Is this a good bet on Finkenauer's part? Because if Chuck Grassley decides to run again, and he has not made a decision, at least publicly, that we are aware of, is this a good bet on her part? Because the odds on her beating an incumbent, Chuck Grassley, are not great, are they?
No, I mean, I think Chuck Grassley is really unbeatable. It's hard to imagine, in the absence of some kind of, you know, serious health condition. There was a long-serving senator from Delaware, William Roth, that he ran for re-election and had some health problems right before. I mean, he was an institution in the state of Delaware, and he ended up losing that election because of health issues. But Chuck Grassley, to all appearances, is still in excellent health. And so I think that most people feel that if he runs for re-election, he takes this race off the table. But on the other hand, I mean, there's no harm done in Democrats exploring this and thinking about it, and they can always decide. The filing deadline isn't until next March. So people have a long time to decide, and there are plenty of candidates who spend a few months exploring or running and then end up not filing their papers. So we'll see. I mean, I thought it was interesting that Abby Finkenauer is already looking at running for Senate rather than waiting to see what the congressional map looks like, because depending on the map of Northeast Iowa, I mean, she didn't lose by much. She lost by about 3%. And it really was a close race. And it was one where Donald Trump, kind of helped his coattails, helped pull Ashley Hinson over the line. So I was surprised that Abby Finkenauer doesn't seem to be taking a serious look at running for the House again.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. Trial balloons, indeed, going up all around. Hey, political hackles. Let's talk more about the election law and political hackles being raised all across the country as Republicans in Texas and elsewhere are apparently attempting to limit the vote following Donald Trump's mandates, his orders to cut down on fraudulent voting and all of this. So we know what happened in Texas over the weekend. Democrats briefly turned back efforts to change voting laws there by walking out, denying them a quorum. But you've been following the final changes that have been made in Iowa related to election law, specifically returning absentee ballots. What have you discovered?
Yes, I just want to say briefly, in case anyone's wondering, why don't the Iowa Democrats do that? In Iowa and in most other states, you only need a simple majority of a legislative chamber to have a quorum. So it wouldn't work to walk out, because if Republicans are in the majority, they automatically have a quorum. So that's why this gambit only works in a handful of states. Oregon is one where Republicans have done it, and now Democrats have done it successfully in Texas. So the last bill that the Iowa Senate debated on May 19th before they adjourned, they voted on some nominations and then they adjourned for the year, was an election bill, which was called a technical bill. Usually the technical bill is small fixes that the Secretary of State's office or county auditors have asked for, very minor changes to bring the make the code consistent in one way or another. But of course, election laws in Iowa are rarely just technical. And so there were new provisions here on unlawful return of a ballot. This was something, as you might remember, we discussed in March when Governor Reynolds signed the earlier election bill. They made it much more difficult for people to have a completed absentee ballot hand delivered. So under the previous law, you know, anybody, I could go around to my neighbors and say, hey, do you want me to drop off your ballot at the auditor's office? But now that was changed. So this new bill that they passed, and the governor hasn't signed it yet, so it's not law yet. She is expected to sign it, though. It defines a new category in the law of a delivery agent, who's somebody who it can't be a candidate for office, and it can't be somebody working for the registered voter's employer or union, but it's somebody who can return an absentee ballot in certain circumstances. But if I'm reading the bill correctly, only if the registered voter cannot return the ballot due to reason of blindness or other disability. So having some other reason, like maybe you just don't own a car, or maybe you're in a domestic violence situation and you don't feel it safe. I mean, people who are not blind or have another disability are not able to just ask a friend or a neighbor to return their ballot. And so I imagine that if and when this gets signed into law, it may be added to the lawsuit that was already filed in March, because it's fairly limited. And the other thing is that a delivery agent can only return a maximum of two ballots. So mm-hmm. I could help two neighbors on my street, but not three. And immediate family members can also help return a ballot, but not everybody has immediate family living nearby. Many people live alone and they don't have family in the area. So this is pretty limiting, and the Democrats were not happy. It was a straight party line vote in both chambers on this bill.
We have 1 minute left. Let's talk quickly about Scott County. When the longtime top elections official, a Democrat, resigned, Republicans on the Board of Supervisors appointed a replacement without soliciting applications and possibly violating the state's open records law. 45 seconds.
So there are three Republican supervisors and two Democrats in Scott County. So the three Republicans got together. They didn't interview anybody. They appointed one Republican, a former Davenport alderwoman, and she's going to hold that office through the 2022 elections unless Democrats can collect more than 9,300 signatures in the next 2 weeks. They've got until a week from tomorrow. So it's a big hurdle to climb. They're going to have to probably collect 10 or 12,000 signatures just to get to that minimum of 9,305 valid signatures. And the Republicans changed the law this year to shorten the time frame for petitioning for a special election. So that's just a big organizing task. And Scott County, of course, Quad Cities, that's the third largest in Iowa. So it's a pretty significant position, the county auditor there.
You did it in 44 seconds. Congratulations. Thank you, Laura. It's been great to be with you again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
You have been listening to Capital Week, and I hope enjoying it on KHOI Community Radio. Laura Bell and I will be right back here in this time slot next week. Zoom-wise, with a look at what makes news with the governor and with the Iowa State Legislature and what it means for every single one of us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We know you have other things to do. Thank you. And we hope you have a great week.